Hi everyone, this is your co-host Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist Patty Wilson. Hi Patty, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, and hopefully our listeners and viewers are also doing very well, and we appreciate you being with us. We're sorry we missed last week, but circumstances beyond our control, so life does happen. But if you are watching this on any kind of video platform, please consider clicking the subscribe button that's down below. I don't remember. And click the bell. So on YouTube, if you'd like our content and like to see more things like it and get notified when we release new content. In the description, you will find a link to our link tree where we have everything show related and email address and all that good stuff. And I think with that, it's your turn. Tag, you're it.
All right. So today I'm going to talk about fairies. I'd like to share what started this journey. So Stu, would you mind reading the lovely post from a dear lady in, I believe it was Australia, right?
Yes. And she did give us permission to use her first name. So I will say just that. So and I'm just going to read it verbatim here. My name is Amber. I'm 24 years old and live in rural Victoria, Australia. I just wanted to let you know how much I love your podcast. I've had a few supernatural experiences myself, so it's really great learning about all these different subjects. Since early childhood, I have been visiting the ethereal realms, going back and forth between the mortal realm and the realms of the Fae. It's surprising how thin the veil is when you want to come through. I remember that when I was 4 years old, after my mom had put me to bed, I would wake up, put on my midnight blue ball gown my mom had made for me Christmas the year before, tiptoe down the hallway, out the back door, and into the night. I would make my way out into the backyard where I knew they would be waiting for me. I would spend the entire night in the fairy realm. A lot of the time, I would have no memory of coming home again. All I remembered is waking up in bed the next morning, still wearing my ball gown with dirty feet. When my mum asked me why I was tired, I would say, because I've been dancing with the fairies all night, of course. Mom always encouraged my imagination, but even at age 4, I could tell the look on her face was concern. Concern because she knew how honest I was, sometimes too honest. She believed me. That's why she made me the ball gown, because she knew I visited the fairies. They were all I talked about. But I suspect she assumed I visited in an imaginary way, like in my dreams. This kept happening, tiptoeing out into the backyard every night, waking up in the morning in my ball gown. My mom would wake me and ask, Amber, have you been dancing with the fairies again? Yes, I would say, and I'm tired, and I won't be going to school today. It all kind of faded away in my early teens. I had completely forgotten about all of it until I randomly remembered it all during the COVID lockdown. Do you have any thoughts on what happened in my childhood? Have you heard of anyone else who has had similar experiences like mine? Thank you for doing the work that you do, and know that there's a girl in Australia who thinks you're amazing. With much love. And P.S., she would love to hear an episode about unicorns and the Tuath de Danann. And I hope I pronounced that correctly.
So, first of all, I want to thank her very kindly for the beautiful post and for the kind words. And I will work on the unicorns and so on. But you sparked my imagination. I have always been fascinated with fairies. And so I decided to do an episode not so much about ancient fairy stories, of which there are plenty, but modern fairy stories. And I have spent the last week or so scouring the internet, talking to friends, interviewing a dear friend of mine who happened to have two such stories to share, and just generally gathering some of the most amazing modern stories I have ever heard. Now, when we think of fairies, we always think of the Celtic nations. You know, we think of the Scottish, the Irish, the British. This is where they came from. And I'm going to talk not just about fairies, but about fairies and pukas and dwarves. All of them kind of come from the fairy realm. They're the fae. And I have been on this amazing journey learning all these really, really cool stories. And I want to start with a story from a young gentleman who is also like her from Australia. And he had the opportunity to go to Ireland, and he decided to spend a summer there. So he bought an old van, and he figured he had enough cash in his pocket that if he could sleep in the van and cook his food along the journey, he could probably stay for 3 months and truly tour Ireland like most people never get to. And that's what began this story. So he buys an old van and he's off on this journey. He comes to this one place where he goes up on this mountain and he sees what are called a dolmen. Now, for people in this country, in the United States, we have no clue what a dolmen is as a general idea. What a dolmen is it is a structure built of stone with at least two upright walls or pinnings and a roof. So, if you would think a Stonehenge or someplace like that, some of those structures would also qualify as a dolmen. Often they're small, you can just barely get in them, or sometimes they're very large and you can walk around inside them. But anyhow, on his journey, he came across multiple places where there were dolmen. And on this one particular evening, it's very late at night, he pulls off. It's a beautiful, bright, moonlit night, and he's on the top of a mountain, very isolated, and he sees in the distance one of these rock formations, and he decides to get out and explore. So he gets out, he grabs his guitar, and he goes over to the dolmen area, sits on a rock by it, and he begins to play music that he wrote himself. And at first he felt very comfortable, very welcomed, and then all of a sudden he kind of got this very uncomfortable feeling that he was being watched. So he picked up his guitar and thought, you know what, something here doesn't want me here now, so I should just probably leave. And he goes back, stows the guitar in the back of his van, gets into the front seat, and that's when he sees this beautiful white, bright blue light in the sky. And he's paused, sitting in his driver's seat, looking out at this thing, watching it moving, and it's weaving and waving and coming closer to him. And he's like, what on earth is that light? And it winks out, and just at about that same spot, three, what he described as tall, thin, tall being about 7 to 8 feet high, figures suddenly appear. They're brown in color, and they're moving, and he's fascinated and a little bit disconcerted by what he's seeing, but he doesn't think to just start the van up and leave. At that point, he's just mesmerized, and they're really far enough away that he doesn't feel threatened by them. So he's watching them, and he said he thinks in total there were four of these figures, because one of them would sort of step out of the picture around one of the rock formations, and then another that was shorter would come out, and then it would disappear, and then the other would come forward again. And they seem to be milling around over there. And he suddenly got this kind of, you know how you get that hackles at the back of your neck, and you just kind of, oh, I don't think I belong here now. And the chills kind of run up your spine. That's what happened to him. He began to get very anxious, and he was going to start the van when he sees three smaller shadows dart out from right in front of the van. He has turned the van on, the lights are on, and they take off, and they're holding hands, and they're about 2.5 feet high. They weren't people, like he could see them in the light, and they were brown in color. They were shadows. But they were two little girls and a little boy, fairies, pixies, something along this nature. And they're dancing and whirling and twirling, and he's kind of enchanted by them, and that the shadowy tall figures have faded away. And he's watching them dancing, and he's thinking, well, I can't start out now because I got to go forward a little bit to get that angle to get out of where I parked, and they're right in front of my vehicle. So he's watching them, and they're dancing, and they're twirling, and he's sort of laughing and smiling because they're entertaining. And he gets a feeling that they wanted to entertain him, or, you know, amuse him in some way. So they keep moving and dancing, and he's maybe 5 minutes of watching this, and they get far enough away that he feels safe and confident to start the van forward without worrying that he'd bump into whatever they are. Mm-hmm. And he starts forward, and this is where it gets really insane. And you know how whenever you start to back up, you always like look in the mirror and then you look behind you? And standing always, outside, yeah. always, yeah, uh-huh. Standing outside the back of his van, he can see her in the rearview mirror, and then by turning his head, he could see her for real, was a young woman, late teens, early 20s. She had the greenest eyes you ever saw. They were glowing green, and her entire body was glowing. Her hair was dark, and although the night was still blowing as though she were in a windstorm, and he got the worst feeling of terror from her, as if she was going to try to somehow board the van, and he knew that was a bad thing. So he takes off, goes down the side of this mountain, this old twisty mountain, into a little village as fast as he can safely do so, pulls off in front of a group of houses and decides, okay, I'm with humanity. I feel better now. Whatever it was, stayed up on the mountain, I'm going to rest. So he climbs into the back of the van, and after a little while, he falls asleep. In the morning, he gets up and he's really disconcerted still by what all he had seen at that dolmen the night before. So he asks around in town, and some people say, oh yeah, we know about the dolmen, you know, it's always haunted up there, or the fairies and the pixies live up there. It's different stories, you know, depending on who you talk to. Well, his itinerary had been for him to start from this little town in the morning and go forward other places, but something about this experience just held him captive. So that night, he decides he's going to go back up and sit in a pretty much the same spot and see what happens, right? So he goes up very late at night, 11, 12 o'clock at night, and he's sitting there and nothing's happening. And that's when he gets the on the side glass of his door. And he looks out and he sees this little woman about 5'2". Old and wrinkly, the quintessential little Irish wizened woman. And she says, what are you doing up here? Are you lost? Is your car broke down? And he winds his window down a little and he says, I'm just kind of checking out the dolmen. And he says, I saw something the last night. Oh, she goes, it's the fairies. They're always playing tricks up here, don't you know? And he's like, so you've had experiences? She's like, gee, what do you think it's like living up in this mountain with the fairies and the tall ones and the wee ones, and they're all playing games and tricks with you? And he's like, well, ma'am, I'm not trying to be rude. And he's thinking, is she real or is she not, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, but it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing out? And she's like, oh, when you get old, you can't sleep. So I take a walk in the middle of the night. Oh, I'm friends with the wee ones. They don't care about me. And he's like, okay. And he's thinking, I didn't pass any houses. I didn't see any houses in the daylight. There's no lights anywhere. There's no, you know, like somebody turning on a porch light to get back to their place. Nothing. Complete darkness. And he's like, okay. Can I give you a ride to your house? You know, because, you know, I don't see any houses around here. And she's like, oh, it's good for me bones to walk. Don't worry about it. And she turns around and she says, turns back and looks at him and says, but you better be careful, son, about them fairies. They can play some pretty rank tricks on you when they want to. And then she just starts off down the road and he doesn't really know what to make of her. To this day, he probably doesn't know what to make of her. And, but this was his night in which he met the tall ones, the wee ones, and maybe something else.
The gnarled one.
Yeah. But I thought this was a great story. And I thought it was a wonderful place to start. So I've come across some really amazing stories. Fate magazine had this wonderful story that was written by a woman who was an artist who actually did a lot of artwork with pixies and what have you when she was in her prime. And the story is about her and her mother. They're out in the garden. And they're tending the roses. And this would have been also in Ireland, about the 1950s. And so her mother's teaching her how to properly trim the roses so that you can start new rose bushes from a cutting. And as she looks down and she's watching her mother, she sees this little misty blue thing moving along. And she steps back a second and her mother says, hold still, watch this. And she does. And this little blue thing becomes this little fairy, about, oh, 6 to 7 inches long, as it shape shifts. And it has the quintessential little wand that we always see.
Wow.
And it's touching the roses, the blooms, as it's going by one, just hovering and touching each of them. And her mother said, she's blessing the flowers, don't you know, so that they'll bloom beautifully for us this year. And as she kind of goes off and she goes to the next bush and the next bush, and they stood for quite a while and watched her. And she said, I was looking for somebody else to contact to say something. And she saw a workman that was working on the property. And she yelled at him, oh, Daniel, can you come here? And she said, just as I said that, this little man, typical of what you would have seen, about, oh, 10 inches tall, in a little brown suit, in a little brown coat, with shoes and a flappy brown hat, goes scurrying out from under the one bush and right in front of Daniel. And she said, he stopped, froze, and he looked at me and he said, Miss, did you see what I just saw, the old, little old man? And she said, I did indeed. And she said, I don't know what was so special about this day, but in this day we got to see two fairies, or a fairy and a gnome, I'm not quite sure, all in the same day. So I really enjoyed some of these stories. There was another story about two young women, they're adult women. Both of them are professional women working in the field of psychology, and they're sisters. They decided to get together with their two little babies. One was 15 months, and I believe the other was 18 months old. And the ladies were having, you know, basically a tea time. This was in London. And they're not thinking fairies at all. They're catching up and telling stories and, you know, what have you. And the two kids are laying in little cots in the living room, you know, napping or playing. And they take their teacups and they go in and they sit down on the sofa and they curl up and they're talking. And all of a sudden, the one sister says, oh my goodness. And she points, and in the doorway stands a little brown shadow about, oh, 2 feet high. And she said she got the impression that this thing had just literally walked out of the wall and was paused looking into the room where her and her sister and the babies were. And she said, it was as surprised to see us, I think, as we were to see it. And it looked at us, and it wasn't a perfect human shape. It was kind of an elongated, but it was still human in nature, but thin, and you couldn't see any features. And it looked at her and her sister and then scurried right into the door and was gone. At that point, she jumped up off the sofa and her sister right behind her, and they came down the hallway, grabbed hold of the door and looked on both sides of the door, and there was nothing there. And her sister said, did you see it? And she said, don't talk. The other sister said, no, don't talk to me about that. And she's like, why? She's like, because I don't want you to contaminate what I saw. Mom's on her way here. When she gets here, each of us will go to the kitchen and we'll tell her our story individually and we'll see if we saw the same thing. So that's what they did. Yep. So that's what they did. So they went ahead and sat down and waited for their mother, explained that they both had to tell her an experience and she could be the judge of whether they saw the same thing. And so the mother listened, and indeed the two young women did indeed see the same thing. Both described it pretty much exactly the same way. And both of them said they weren't afraid of it, but they did get the idea that it was startled, that they could see it, and that it literally was absorbed into the door.
Very, very interesting.
Yes. And that takes us to the idea that they come from a different realm. So when you read a lot of the stuff about the fairy lore, the fae, they come from a different dimension, a fairyland, if you will. And it's not just little tiny fairies, like the little 6-8 inch ones, you know, that you see on TV. There's all different types. There's fairies of the air, there's green fairies and elves and what have you. And there's all these different dimensional ones that some are tall, some are short and squat, some are friendly, some are not. Some of them like to play nice tricks on people, some are malicious. And Of course, there's all the stories of fairies trying to steal children, and that comes from all over the world. So I wanted to tell a couple more stories from Europe, and then I wanted to move to the Americas. So the next story was a really interesting one to me because it was completely different than anything I've ever heard in my life. And I think that everybody listening will find it to be an interesting story as well. So there was a story about a farmer who lived in Scotland near a place called the Fairy Hill. And it's just the name of a high hill in the area. And he had lived on the farm his entire life. He was quite used to the region. And one night in the middle of the night, he woke up to the sound of music outside. And this is obviously rural, and the way the buildings were built in Germany, I heard a lot of this. I didn't know that they did this also in Scotland and Ireland and what have you, but a lot of times they build either a long building and one end of it's the barn and the other end of it's the housing, or they put the barn in the basement and then the house on the top, and that way it helps with heating. It helps with being able to get to the livestock if the weather is really terrible. And that's how traditionally they were built. Well, his was built so that it was long. And as he's listening to this music, this fiddling music, and the sound of little tiny feet dancing and this, you know, chanting, and yelling and what have you, he's completely flabbergasted. He has no idea what to make of it. So he gets up and he looks out the window and he kind of looks down toward where the barns are, and there's light. Well, he knows he didn't leave any lights on in the barns. And so he goes and pulls on his boots and he starts down there and he feels a bit of trepidation. And he also feels this sense of urgency that he needs to look. So he decides to peek between the cracks of the wall in the barn rather than get in the window where they could see him. And he puts his eye to the crack and he looks in and he can see these little fairy people, maybe about a foot and a half high. And there's dozens of them. The barn is just loaded like a big old hoedown. And they're dancing and they're singing and they're yelling, and there's a fiddler and he's up on one of the barn beams and he's, you know, playing his fiddle and people are laughing and clapping, and it's just this great big party. And of course, he's grown up in an area where fairies are, you know, talked about. So he's like, isn't this amazing? Look at the wee ones. And he's watching this whole thing. And he notices that they come around one of the cattle and they begin to circle this cow round and round and round. And they're dancing, but they're very serious now. And they're keeping an eye on the cow and they're dancing round and round. And the fiddler's just fiddling and it's getting wild, manic almost. And then it stops. And at that point, a rope of some sort is lassoed around the animal's throat, and they come rushing in at it, and they begin to eat the thing completely alive, and it's not making a sound. It's just standing there like it's frozen in time, and they're tearing at it, and then he's horrified. He doesn't know what to make of it, and it's just literally collapsing. And finally, they've eaten the entire thing. All these, this horde of little people. And it's just a pile of bones now laying there, and the rope hanging with the head up, but it's, you know, it's all gone. Everything's gone. It's just bloody, awful thing. The hide is laying on the ground, and the fiddler starts to fiddle. And they begin to go around the cow, and a group of them pick up the bones, and they're beginning to reassemble the bones. And then they pause. There seems to be a problem. And they can't find one of the bones. It's a bone from the foot of the back one hoof, and they can't find it. And there's a bunch of chattering going on, and then an urgency about it. And he doesn't understand anything they're saying, but he's just terrified. If they could do that to the cow, what could they do to him? So you don't want to make a noise. So he's just standing there with his eye glued to that spot, hoping nobody notices. And they pull the hide of the cow back up over the bones. And they begin to play the fiddle, and they begin to go round and round, and they're dancing, but it's more solemn. And All of a sudden, he sees a jerk of the rope and the cow's head comes up and it's alive and full and whole once again. And as soon as that happens, they all scatter and are gone. Doesn't know what to make of any of this, but he can see the cow standing there contentedly chewing its cud. And he turns around and he heads back for fear they'll catch him. The next day he goes out to the barn and he's doing his, you know, his job, tending the livestock and what have you. And he sets the cows to go out to to graze. And he notices that the cow, the one that had been eaten the night before, is walking with a hitch in its leg as though it's got a bum leg. And he thinks that's the leg where they couldn't find the leg bone. And sure enough, it seems to be what they call halt. It's hobbling. So he calls the vet and the vet says, I can't explain it, but there's a bone and it's all messed up and gone. I don't know what happened to it.
He did.
He did indeed, but I don't suspect he ever told anyone.
Yeah, I'm trying to wrap my head around what was the entire purpose of that.
I don't know. He doesn't know, but it was the most amazing. I've never heard a story quite like that. As though they could feast on it and then reanimate it so that no harm came to him. He didn't lose the livestock, and the animal was reassembled, if you will, and went on about its life as though everything were okay except for that missing bone they couldn't find. Was it how they eat? And we know that they steal things from humans. There's plenty of stories all the way back into the 14, 1500s that I have found where they talk about them stealing utensils or stealing children or stealing a pot or a spoon or food, maybe corn or some potatoes or something like that. But I've never in my entire life heard such a thing.
Me neither until now.
It was a fascinating story, mm-hmm. I thought. So obviously in Europe, particularly, like I said, in Great Britain and Ireland and Scotland, you'll hear a lot of those stories. In the Scandinavian countries, you hear a lot about the dwarves and different, you know, types of little men, little beings. So I started to think, I wonder what happens in the United States. Because we hear the stories here, but how did they get here? So there's two different distinct categories, I think. There are Native American stories from many tribes of little beings. Some of them are 2 and 3 feet tall, sometimes even a little taller than that. And some of them are little and wee, like 6 to 10 inches tall. And these little beings lived alongside the Native American people prior to the Europeans arriving. And there was this really interesting story about in Canada, about a group of them that would literally dive into holes into the ground. And there was this really interesting, it was a young Native man who was with his fiance visiting her grandmother. And her grandmother had like a little hut off the main house that was like the place where you would put guests. And he is sitting there on the porch and he sees one of these little men scurrying along. And when he yells, hey, who are you? And what are you up to? Because he doesn't recognize them. The little man kind of startles and he looks off and he jumps into a hole in the ground. The guy gets up and he goes out and he looks and there's no hole in the ground. But he saw it, you know, he saw there was a hole and the guy went through it. And he went inside and he told his girlfriend about it. And she said, oh, yeah, don't start talking to my grandma about that stuff. She'll never stop. But he did, you know, he did talk to the grandma. Because he's more than a little curious at this point. And she says that these are beings that have been living alongside them for millennia, if you will, and that they live in a ground or they live in caves and that they just coexist. Sometimes they steal a few things, sometimes they play some tricks, but if you don't annoy them and you don't try to harm them, they mostly let you alone. And she said, oh, I've known for years that they're out there. I've seen them a few times, but I never speak to them and I don't look at them and I let them know that I don't want to bother them. So that was an interesting story. And then I came across this story about, I believe it was the Cherokee. They have found these little figures that were buried, and they're buried sitting up with their knees and their elbows tucked together like a little bundle. They're only about 12 to 18 inches high. They're definitely humanoid. There were several of them that have been excavated out, and nobody has the faintest clue what they are. But the native people tell them that these are the beings, the magical beings that lived in the woods, and they very much fit the bill of what you would call a fairy. And they actually have photographs of them. It was fascinating. There was actually a couple archaeological photographs of a couple of these little beings that have been uncovered during a dig. So they're not just a story, they're not just a myth. There's a biological entity there that they found. They have no clue what they are. They're too small to be a child. And the DNA doesn't match. So I thought it was really interesting about that. And then I came sometimes in Canada, there's a lot of people from like the Scandinavian countries that settled here. And same with the Northeast. You'll find the Dutch, you know, came here. The Scandinavians came here and they settled early on. And there are stories that came with them that among the stowaways on the ship were fairies and dwarves that were attached to their families or were curious and wanted to know where the people were going. And they moved and migrated from Europe to the Americas with them. Not that they knew about it, but they started encountering them again when they got here. And they recognized that these were the same beings that they had seen in the old country. And the theory was that they tagged along, if you would. Interesting, huh?
Very much so.
And that brings me to yet another story. This also took place in Canada. And this was a story about a woman who her and her husband lived out in the woods, far out in a rural area. And she was driving home late one evening. It's late fall. There's cornfields everywhere. And you know how when the corn dries out, it kind of makes that weird little husky sound as the wind is blowing through it. It rattles. So it was one of those nights. And the whole way down through this area, it's nothing but cornfields on both sides. If you were so inclined, it was a Children of the Corn night. And so she's driving along and she's looking for deer, frankly, because, you know, that's what hangs out in cornfields, really. And so she's looking for deer and she catches motion on her left-hand side in the periphery. And she thinks, ugh, it's a deer. So she slows way down. And you never know what deer is going to do. It'll jump out in front of you or whatever. And whatever this was in a little ditch, and it hefted itself up onto the road. And it was a little man about 3 foot tall, all bulky, dressed in furs. And it didn't have a man's face. It had a pug face, that smushed in face. And it took a look at her. It wasn't in a hurry. And it just sort of shambled along across the road right in front of her headlights. And she got this horrible feeling, almost as though it was angry that she had seen it. And it just scared her very badly. So she waited till it was gone into the corn on the other side. And she took off down the road. She gets home and she realizes she's going to have to get out of the car and go in the house all alone because her husband's not home. He's working that night too. And there's cornfields all around the house. And so she's a little more than nervous when she jumps out of the car and she kind of trucks it to the porch, grabs the key and slams it into the lock and what have you, because she said, I had this awful feeling that it knew exactly who I was, that it met my eyes and it somehow knew me. And when I got home, it would be standing there waiting. She said it wasn't, unless it was in the corn watching me, but I knew it was there somewhere. And I thought that was really interesting.
And you're right. Yeah.
Now, I have two more stories I would like to share. These are very local to you and I, Stu. One of them takes place in the town of Gettysburg. We're actually right outside the town of Gettysburg. There was a gentleman who worked for a plumbing company, and he and his boss were in the truck headed to a client, middle of the afternoon. And outside of the town of Gettysburg, there's all these little bridges and what have you. Some of them you can drive on still, and some of them are marked as historical sites and you can't. And he's sitting in the passenger seat as his boss is driving along, and he sees, standing near the mouth of one of these little bridges you can't drive across, a little man in green clothes that looked forever bit like an elf. Just the classical. And he sees this, and he said at the same time in the back of his head, he noted that his boss kind of hit the brake and slowed way down. So he got a really good look at this thing, right? And as they drove on by it, his boss looked at him and said, "Did you just see that little green, that little man in the green clothes on the bridge?" And he said, "I closed my eyes and I thought, oh, thank God somebody else saw it too." And he said, "Yes, it did." So they turned around and they came back, and there was nobody there. There were no cars parked there when they passed by. There was no cars parked there when they got back. There was really no place for it to go, but it wasn't there anymore. And it's that was only a couple years ago, 2, 3, 4 years ago, something like that. And, you know, it's something that he's puzzled over ever since. Now, the next story comes from a dear friend and also a listener. So I would like to thank her for her time. She told me this one and the other one I just told as well. But she's talked about her and her son would often walk out in the woods, well, not too far from their house. They live in this in Adams County. That's the county where Gettysburg's at.
Right.
They live in Adams County as well, but in a little further out of town. And they would walk this little beautiful trail. Over the years, she and her son would talk about all kinds of quizzical things, you know, Bigfoots and monsters and elves and fairies and all kinds of things. And she always encouraged him in his imagination and what have you. And over the years, the place changed a little bit. The path got widened, and the Boy Scouts put a little picnic table in one spot where you could pause and have a meal or sit and rest. You know, that kind of stuff. Things just change a little over time. So over the years, her and her son had made this trek literally countless times. So anyhow, now her son's a teenager, and they're making this journey again. Just a regular afternoon, late fall, you know, what have you. And they're out there, and they see the picnic table and decide to sit down and rest a few minutes and just chat out in the woods where it's peaceful and quiet. And they have long talks and always have. And as they're sitting there, she notices, it almost reminded me of like a dandelion puff, you know, the a seed from a dandelion with that little bit of silk.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's sort of how she described it. And it came up out of the weeds, where there was some weeds there at the edge of the picnic table, and came up and floated in between her and her son and kind of paused in front of them, just hung there. And they're looking at it, and then it sort of went around the back of her head and was back behind her, and her son said, "What is that?" She's like, "Oh, it was dandelion or something." And he's like, "Mom, it's like paused behind your head." And she said, "I turned a little bit and I saw it, and it went on around my head, and then against the wind, went back over to where they saw it rise up out of the bushes, the weeds, and went back down into the weeds right there." And she said, he looked at me, and I said, "I have no clue." And he's like, "Was it a fairy?" She's like, "I honestly don't know." And she said, "I honestly can't tell you to this day what it was, but whatever it was, it could stop, and it was as though it was checking them out, went around the back of her head and paused there as if listening, and then moved on whenever he called attention to the fact it was still there."
I'm just trying to think what I would do in a situation like that. Now, listening to you tell the story, I would like to think that I would try to communicate. But then somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm probably also thinking, like, maybe I shouldn't do that. So... You never know, because you hear, you know, both good and bad, you know, of
yeah.
fairies.
And I have to tell you, when I heard her tell me the story, I told her another story. I knew of two women who had been in, it would have been maybe 4 or 5 miles from there. There's a lot of little beautiful bed and breakfasts all over the outskirts of Gettysburg where people can stay, many of them on or right beside battlefield territory. And I know of two women who came to stay at one of the B&Bs, and they were out in the woods, and they got the bright idea that they thought there might be fairies there. So they decided they were going to leave a little treat for the fairies. So they decided to go back to their room, and they got a little bit of cornmeal from the kitchen. They asked the lady that was cooking if she could give them a handful of corn, just a hand, little bit, like a teaspoonful. And they had a little bottle, those little taster bottles of wine. So they took it out, and they thought, well, we'll see if we could come up with something to put them in and what have you. And they go out there, and there's this right after you go up over the hill, there's a little hill there, and you go up over it, and there's nothing but woods and a big old tree stump. And they had been out there earlier when they got this bright idea, and there had not been anything on the tree stump. And now there sits two half walnut shells as if waiting their offering, right?
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, isn't this lucky? We got our little walnut shells, right? So they pour a little bit of wine, and they pour a little bit of cornmeal into the two shells. And they say to them, hey, guys, if you're here, I just wanted to give you a little gift. And we're just going to walk up the hill here a little ways. And we're just going to, sit here for a little while. Now, they walked up the hill into the woods a little further, and they're sitting on a downed tree, and they're still in clear sight in the distance of the big tree stump with the little offering on it, if you will. Out of nowhere comes a doe, and she comes straight out. She looks at them, doesn't panic, and she just stands there. She's staring at them for like 5 minutes. Finally, the one lady goes, shush. Go on, little doe, go on. Because she's blocking them from seeing the tree stump. And uh-huh. The doe kind of looks at her, and it's just nonchalant, just nibbles a couple pieces of grass and keeps standing there. And then it looks over at the tree stump, looks back at the ladies, and then just slowly walks away. 4, 5, 6, it's gone. And there's no place to go. It's just woods with little tiny saplings and what have you, and brush kind of. And they get up and they go down and they look, and both of those little half walnut shells are completely empty. One is turned upside down, and the other has been cracked in half and turned upside down. And they believe that it was the fairies.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I know that right outside this window mm-hmm. is a flower bed, and I will say there are no hickory trees in my yard, and I think I would have to walk at least 200 yards to come across a hickory tree. Down at the next cross street is where I know that they are, but I will find cracked open hickory nuts yeah. outside the window, just laying right there in the flower bed.
Yeah.
One time I found them in the middle of my driveway, and I looked at my security cameras, and there were squirrels. They were actually dragging them up there.
Oh, that's
cool.
They cracked
them up, and then they ate them, and then they left. They just left their detritus right there behind them on my property. The nerve of them. But
they don't recognize your rights.
I guess, but that's interesting, though, that the hickory nuts naturally come apart. Yeah, mm-hmm. So a walnut half would not, that I would think of. At least, I mean, we use nutcrackers. We have to use leverage to crack open our walnuts. So,
yeah.
Very interesting. And I just find that the deer was, whether it was a deer or not, running interference for whoever consumed the wine and the cornmeal.
It was just really interesting because it stood there for the longest time, and no matter what they did, it didn't spook. As though it was just, it had a job to do. It was just going to hang out there. And to take it back to our dear listener who's shared with us, I have found stories of people, children, and adults who have stepped into the fairy realm. There was a wonderful story that also took place in England of a woman and her children who were having a picnic, and they had just kind of driven out into the country, and they had laid a cloth on the ground and were just, you know, had a little picnic lunch with them, and they were having a good time, and she was building memories. And all of a sudden, she just kind of got this odd feeling as though they weren't alone, and it made her uncomfortable. And so she got back in the car with her children, and she said, "Well, let's just move on. I think there might have been somebody out there." And the little girl said to her, "Oh, do you mean the fairies that were dancing in the meadow around us while we were eating?" And she said, "What?" And she said, "Yes, Mama, there were fairies dancing in the meadow." And she said, this is actually was told by the child, who's now an adult woman. And she said, "My mother looked absolutely stricken. And she said, 'Did you honestly see them?' And she said, 'Yes, I see them all the time. But they're different than the ones I saw today. These ones I didn't know.' And she said, 'Well, where have you seen them?' And she said, 'Oh, I see them at the house, and I see them in the yard. And sometimes other places I'll see ones, but not always the same ones.'" So yes, she's not the only one, although dancing all the night away is a little bit more interesting. But I thought it was fascinating to come that close, that this little girl could see them, she could see them dancing, she could talk with them, and she wasn't a bit scared at all. And with that, I am done.
All right, well, thank you very much for those. And I would like to thank anyone who has bought us a coffee. Again, that is completely optional, but we really do appreciate that. And yeah, my coffee's out right now, so I'm looking to get a replacement soon. But bad luck today, as you know, before Patty and I started recording, I made a half pot of coffee, thinking that, okay, it's in the evening, so I don't want to have that much caffeine. And I had just filled my mug and then also filled the my little thermos bottle. And I rinsed out the coffee pot, rinsed out the basket, put them on the drainer by the sink to dry. And I turned around and I heard a smash, and the coffee crepe landed on the carpet that we have right in front of our but it's still shattered anyway. So time for another coffee maker. Oh, believe me, I have backups.
Oh, I'm not doubting that at all, as much as you love your coffee. So
with that, I'm going to say good night.
And good night, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the stories. And we're going back to ghosts, I promise you, very soon.
Get the cat hair off me now.